Welcome back to Silver Lake TV. I'm John Papa, Silver Lake Evangelist here, and today I've got Brian Noyes.
Yes.
How you doing?
Doing great. Glad to be here.
And you are a regional director.
Yes. So I'm with iDesign, or .NET Architecture and Design Consulting and Training Company. Mm-hmm. Also a Microsoft regional director, which is a group of advisors, external advisors to Microsoft, basically about 130 of us worldwide, and also MVP.
And you've made quite a name for yourself in the data space, the data mining tutorials. You've been on DNR TV. You've done quite a bit.
Yep. Trying to get out there a lot.
Current role, you're working with Microsoft in collaboration on PMP projects, right?
Correct, yeah. So Prism is a set of libraries we're going to be talking about today. Mm-hmm. I was directly involved with Prism 1, which came out back in June 2008. Worked as basically a half-time contractor for the PMP team. Mm-hmm. And I'm back in a similar role now on the current version we're working on, which is going to come out in the fall, called Prism 4.
So this leads us all into our topic today, which is how do you develop large-scale or any kind of business applications with Silverlight, and one good option is to use the libraries that are in Prism.
Exactly. Right. So Prism allows you to build, like you said, it's really targeted for large applications. If you're building a fairly small application, you maybe don't need the extra complexity that you have to sort of pay up front when you use a framework like Prism.
Which is one of the problems when you're demoing it, because a lot of demos, you'll have two screens. Yeah. People are like, that's a lot of code for two screens.
Yeah, or as you'll see when I start demoing, you know, the solution itself, when you look at some of the samples, is intimidating based on the number of projects that's there, even for a relatively simple app. But that's because we're really couching it in the context of an app that's going to have, say, you know, hundreds of screens, not
right.
Two or three screens.
So two things I really want to make clear to everybody, too, is, and one, when you're using Prism, that you don't have to use everything.
Exactly.
So you can use what you want, and you're going to explain what those things are.
Sure.
And the second side of it is, know before you get into Prism, you know, it's not that difficult to get into, but you have to understand which aspects you want to use.
Exactly.
So it's like a buffet.
Exactly. And that was one of the upfront design goals with Prism. Its predecessor, the Composite UI application block, had a problem, which was it was an all or nothing prospect.
Right.
You know, you built from line one of code a CAP application. And so we set out with Prism and said we want more, like you said, an a la carte menu is exactly mm-hmm. how I describe it. There's four main features to Prism. You can use any one, any two, any three, and you know, use them in whatever combination makes sense. The other thing that's a little intimidating about it is there is sort of some prerequisite knowledge coming into Prism. You have to be comfortable with the concept of a container because Prism uses containers under the covers, and you have an option on what container you can use.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to at least have had some exposure to patterns and UI patterns and
right.
the motivations for why you would want to separate things. And you know, something like MVC, Model View Controller, Model View Presenter, and now Model View View Model in the Silverlight and WPF space.
And we'll explain throughout this when we get to these topics of why these are important. We're not just going to explain today, here's what a command is and you're going to use it.
Exactly.
Explain why you'd want to. And in some cases, you may not want to use some of the features.
Exactly.
Right. Yep. So without further delay, why don't I let you jump in?
Sure. So I'm going to switch to demo mode here. What I've got open here is what we call a reference implementation. It's a sample application that ships with the Prism code.
And this is Prism 2.2?
This is Prism 2.2, which is the currently released version. People can find that out on CodePlex if they just go to prism.codeplex.com. There's a link on the homepage there for Prism 2.2.
Great.
And then the upcoming version that we've alluded to that I'm working on now is called Prism 4. That should be out in the fall timeframe, September, October-ish.
To align with the Silverlight 4 naming.
Exactly.
Right.
So this doesn't present very well in this resolution here, but the idea is it's a stock trading application. You've got various fictional stocks here. You can somewhat see over here on the right, fairly chopped off, that as you select things, different views over here are changing. And the whole idea is that, you know, you could just build this as one big window or one big control, basically, but for real apps, you're going to want to start breaking things up.
Sure.
And so Prism is all about loose coupling, decomposition of your app into modular pieces, and then being able to bring all those pieces together at runtime in a coherent fashion for
the
user.
Why is modularity good?
Modularity is good because, you know, when you start building something like this, a more traditional approach to build an application like this would be to just, you know, start with one big window, like I said, and then you realize you're getting this big mess of code. So then you start breaking it up into user controls, perhaps. But you still end up with user control A has a reference to B, B has to C, C has to A, and you end up with this tightly woven
web of
references. And so the modularity part and the decomposition part is all about being able to work on pieces in isolation, have their dependencies on those other parts be more loose based on interfaces, be able to dynamically compose through things like dependency injection.
So it's not just if you have a large team, you've got different teams working on different projects. You could have a very small team.
Exactly.
But maybe you don't want to recompile the entire application every time you do something.
Right, because the decoupling there is really focused on testability, maintainability, extensibility, mm-hmm. and those are important for any scale application.
A lot of abilities.
Yep.
Okay.
It's all about abilities. And where this becomes important for customers, too, is that, you know, a lot of customer apps I've worked with, dozens of customers over the last couple of years on Prism apps, and one of the common things that draws people to Prism is the ability to kind of separate things into feature sets. Mm-hmm. A lot of apps out there will, you know, have separate units of functionality, and they'll possibly sell those individually to customers. And if customer A doesn't have feature set B, then they don't even want to give it to them. And they don't want to have to do open heart surgery to yank that part out and ship them a version that doesn't have that feature.
Right.
So being able to build things as these isolated decoupled parts.
They could be separate DLLs or separate zap files.
Exactly.
Or, I mean, with WPF or Silverlight.
But if you don't use the right patterns to kind of glue them together at runtime, it's
hard
to keep those extractable. So that's the basic app. And there's some other functionality that's chopped off here, but that's the general idea of the code we'll be looking at. Now, when you look at the solution tree here, I've got it all collapsed, so it's not too intimidating. One thing you'll notice is there's both a desktop and a Silverlight version. Prism targets both WPF and Silverlight.
Okay.
And then as you start expanding things, it starts to get a little scary because you start seeing lots of, let me collapse here as I go, lots of individual projects, but a lot of those are unit tests. So testability is a big focus of Prism, and in the code, the team at PNP is a strong agile methodology with pair programming, test-driven development, daily stand-ups, mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff, and all the code has very rigorous unit testing. So that's a big part of the code here. But functionally, what you've got is a set of modules. And Prism applications, all the functionality really goes in the modules.
So each module is, and this is the StockTrader app, the RI mm-hmm. app.
Exactly.
You got four modules, which are four sections of code or
exactly.
functionality.
And you can see the names here. This one's about market positions, market data, basically, news about different stocks that are there. That part of the app was chopped mm-hmm. off on the screen. The positions, the table of stocks that you hold, and any orders you want to place to buy and sell those things.
And the reason you're naming these with Silverlight in the name extension is because you also have a WPF version.
Exactly.
It's more for you.
Exactly. And then the main Silverlight application itself, the core app is usually fairly stupid about the real functionality of the app. We call it a shell for that reason. It's really just a place for content to
live. There's not a whole lot of code in there, as you can see.
Yeah, exactly. There's basically the main window itself, and then the other key piece is this thing called a bootstrapper, and that's kind of all the initialization code that brings in all the Prism bits and loads up your modules and gets the app running.
I always explain it as the adrenaline rush for the application.
That's a great way to describe it.
And then you get your themes, your resources, any common, you know, not even just common controls. I want to be careful there because you can also have a library that you can
sure.
access for all the modules.
Yeah, but
too.
Kind of application scope things that you want right. to tie in through the main app.
Good. And then just to look through the other projects there, I notice you've got the composite application library. That actually is Prism, right?
Right. Yeah, so Prism itself, in terms of the functional code that you'll use, Prism is it's both this code, it's the samples like the one I'm showing here, and it's the documentation that supports it is really the set of guidance that is Prism.
And when you create a composite application, when you create Prism, it's a lot easier to say. When you create a Prism application, you don't have to import the code for Prism. You can actually just refer to the DLLs too, right?
Exactly. Yeah, you can either do it binary or bring it into your solution like this.
Great.
And so the other thing you'll see here as I start expanding the tree here is there's a lot of link files in here. Most of the functionality in the Silverlight version is actually just pointing to a single implementation in the WPF version. So that's another thing of Prism is there's a number of customers I've worked with that want a deeply integrated WPF client for the desktop, but then have a subset of that functionality available with wider reach via Silverlight. And this helps.
So you're not copying and pasting services and
exactly.
files. You're using linking
exactly.
where you can.
Yep. And there's a separate tool called the Project Linker that helps with the deployment and building of all that.
Okay.
So then in terms of the feature sets, Prism has four main features in the core libraries here. There's modularity itself, the thing that allows you to break these things into these modules, which are typically class libraries that you bring together dynamically at runtime. Then there's UI composition, which the core feature there is called regions. It's very similar to ASP.NET master pages.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that you design kind of a set of placeholders, and then you plug content dynamically into those placeholders.
Or like in SharePoint with the web parts and the zones
exactly.
that they have. Yeah.
Yep. So modularity, regions, commands, and events are the other two pieces. So the commands are basically implementations of the iCommand interface that let you point to code in your code behind. Typically in a view model or a controller or something like that. And then the events are a loosely coupled PubSub event model so that these loosely coupled parts that aren't supposed to have direct references to each other can still communicate behind the scenes.
So we've got modularity.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the regions.
Yep.
We've got commands and events. And you're going to explain the difference between commands and events because they fundamentally, they both do the same thing. They perform communication.
Right.
But when you use one versus the other is a very vast difference.
Yep. So first with the modules, you can just see structurally all modules are really is a class library with a module class within it. And all the module class does is just like you said, the bootstrappers, the adrenaline rush for the app as a whole. Mm-hmm. The module class is the adrenaline rush for the individual module loading up. It's your point of initialization for that module. And you just implement an interface called iModule. You have an initialize method, and you do whatever that module needs to do to kind of plug in its parts.
Okay.
And then the thing that brings them all together again is that bootstrapper. There's a phase of construction in the bootstrapper where you tell the base class, there's a base class that ties in with the container. In this case, you can see Unity container is what's supported out of the box with Prism 2.2. One of the thrusts in Prism 4 is to also offer as an option the managed extensibility framework, MEF.
And that's a good point to stop there. We're not going to get deep into MEF and Unity here, but to understand that both Unity and MEF can, they're not the same thing, but they can solve the same problem that Prism needs.
Exactly.
And both of them are options in Prism 4.
Basically, inversion of control and dependency injection are the core patterns there.
Yeah. Excellent.
Okay, so the bootstrapper basically has a phase of construction here, or a phase of the adrenaline rush, as you said, where it gets all these modules. You just identify what modules you want, and the Prism code will get those loaded. And there's different loading strategies. You can scan a directory, you can use configuration-based, or you can do it statically, like I'm showing here.
So now, in this case, I notice that you're using actual strong types with news module, watch module. If you wanted to keep those loosely typed, can you still use the catalog structure?
Yes, so the config-based or the directory scan give you ways to do it without having explicit type information.
Great.
in the truly
are loosely coupled. So.
Exactly. And actually, you can even do it dynamically here because these are just method calls to add module. So you could read in from your own form of, you know, just text-based type information and call it.
And the point there being doing exactly what you mentioned, where a company rolls out maybe three of these modules. Later, they roll out the news module. They don't want to have to recompile the application.
Exactly.
So that'd be great.
Okay. So that's what modules are at their core. And then basically, they're just a container for functionality at that point. The regions themselves is really kind of hard to walk through here in the time we have, but basically it's the dynamic aspect here that we've got a bunch of isolated views defined, and they get plugged into the overall UI when it runs. So the fact that this is a view, this listing, this graph up here is a view, this is a view down here, and those are being plugged into these regions that are defined within the overall UI.
And regions use different types of containers that, not to use the same word as you used before, but use containers where you can have them contain lists or just a single entity.
Yeah, it's really just a reserved chunk of real estate within a containing element. So you use the built-in container controls, things like content control, items control, as those containers, mm-hmm. and you just decorate them with an attached property that says this is region X. And then when the modules load up, they can construct a view and say, I want to place this view in region X.
Right. And you define those regions inside the shell view.
Yes.
Right.
Yep. So just to show that real quick so they get a sense of what the code looks like, we could look at the shell level.
And the shell view is usually very, very simple.
Yeah, very thin. You know, most common layout is left navigation pane, main content area.
Yep. We can't get away from that L-shaped applications.
Yeah. Some sort of Outlook applications out there that people are used to. And
yes.
So get this thing loaded up here, and somewhere down here, a bunch of animation stuff. There is a items control, for example. You can see this regions attached attribute attached property over here, region name, main toolbar region.
So you name the region. And
yep. So even with toolbars, you can kind of dynamically plug in your controls loading up from these modules. Okay. And then for the commands and events, we can go look at.
All right. So we've hit modularity. We've hit regions.
Yep.
We're going to move on to commands and events, which, again, can get muddy.
Yeah. So, you know, first to make the distinction between the two, they're similar in that they're a means of communication, like you mentioned. The main distinction I make of commands is that usually the command is invoked by a piece of UI based on user interaction. And there's the other key distinction is there is an expectation something's going to happen now because I did this.
Yeah.
Whereas events, you know, pure events are more fire and forget. There may be someone out there listening. If there is, they can do something about it. But there's not an expectation of action reaction.
Right. And the command, you demand a result to happen. There's a one-to-one relationship there.
Yep.
In an event, it could be a zero to
Well, commands you can actually have more than one, and actually that's one of the things we built into Prism here is the built-in commanding in WPF, for example, doesn't really address something like a submit all or save all button. It can handle save, but not multiple handlers of that aren't handled well. So there's two built-in command implementations in Prism. One's called a delegate command, and one's called a composite command. Mm-hmm. The delegate command just uses delegates, as its name says, to give you a layer of indirection, and we can take a look at one of those.
And these are both just implementations of the standard I command interface.
Exactly.
That's in SQLite 4.
So let's go to this orders controller, for example. And back here, you can see there's this delegate command class that we're using. If we jump to its implementation, all it really has here, if I can get this to scroll, delegate command of T, you can have a strongly typed argument, is what mm-hmm. the T is for. And then you just use an action delegate to point to an execute method. And the other key thing that commands have over events is there's this notion of enable, disable.
Right.
So because you don't want the user sitting there banging on a button thinking something's going to happen when it's not appropriate, you tie in with that the ability to automatically disable that button when the command's not appropriate.
And that's really, really nice, because especially with the obvious thing is the dirty form.
Right.
You're typing some data, you want the save button automatically enable, disable.
Exactly, based on
and this
validation.
This will fire it for you.
Right.
That's good to go. So, yeah, and when you get to when you're doing commands, we've got delegate command, you've got the composite command. There's other implementations out there, like relay command.
Yeah, relay command's the other. Delegate command and relay command, if you look at the relay commands that are out there in frameworks like MVVM Lite and Caliburn and some of the others, mm-hmm. a lot of them call it relay command. Structurally, it's the same as a Prism delegate command.
Yeah.
You just use delegates to point to the real handling of the methods.
And there's other techniques as well, and this is why one of the reasons why in SQLite 4 there is no implementation of command.
Right.
Because there's many ways to do it.
Yep, you could just, you know, for a discrete action that you know what you want to do, you could just implement iCommand, say, on a view model and have a, you know, have a specific implementation of that or on some separate object that is the command object.
So discrete actions, great for commands.
Right.
Okay.
So that's delegate command, and the only difference with composite command is you can see this class has some composite commands defined, and some of these are that scenario I mentioned, submit all, cancel all. Mm-hmm. When you want multiple targets, there's not really a good way through a single command object to point to multiple things.
No.
So this just a composite command is really just a container. It's a list of commands internally. Mm-hmm. And so you can register with this command, add in a separate command, which is typically a delegate command as a child. And then when it fires, it'll just go out to each of the child commands and execute them. And also pull them in terms of the can execute, enable, disable. It'll say, you know, are any of you disabled right now is the logic. If any one is disabled, then the overall command is disabled.
Right.
And so you can define these things. These are defined similar to the way WPF actually defines routed commands as static objects. You don't have to do it as statics. They could be placed in the container. They could have local scope.
And if you didn't want to use these commands, you wanted to use your own command, you have that option with Prism.
Absolutely, yeah. This is just so you don't have to write some of that plumbing code yourself.
Again, that's the whole point of Prism. One of the big points of Prism over CAB was you don't have to use everything in here if you don't want to.
Exactly. Okay. Now, in Prism 2.2, you'll also see that you know, because it was there for SQLite 3 before SQLite got iCommand handling from buttons and hyperlinks and such. There's also some built-in behaviors or a built-in behavior for a click event on a button, for example, mm-hmm. where you can tie in through a, you know, through the behavior and point to a command handler in a view model, for example.
Right.
But that's somewhat obvious or deprecated now that you can directly use commands in SQLite 4.
So that gives you a good lead into a question that we get asked a lot.
Sure.
I'm sure you hear this a lot. I'd be surprised if you didn't. When you're writing an application, you can write these commands for buttons.
Mm-hmm.
But what if you have some other event that you want to tie them to, a user interaction event, like selecting a row in a list box?
Absolutely. Well, that's where behaviors come in, is commands only handle a certain you know, set of scenarios, specifically buttons, hyperlinks. That's, you know, pretty much it, and menu items in WPF.
Behaviors are very good for that. You could write your own command to do that.
Right.
But you'd have to write one for each.
Well, and what we're actually leaning towards now in Prism 4, and this is still a open debate, actually, I've got going on some of the lists right now, is, you know, you can use behaviors in the place of commands as well,
mm-hmm.
because you can use a behavior that points to a command and hooks up to any event, such as a button click or menu item click.
Right.
And so you actually can get away with behaviors and just forget commands exist.
You
now,
could.
Whether that's a good idea or not, is there's a lot of reasons it's not a good idea in terms of syntax and other things.
It's a very polarizing question,
yes,
I've noticed.
Yes, it is, definitely. But specifically within Prism 4, we're going to have a number of other behaviors that address those kinds of scenarios, things like, you know, selection in lists or multi-select in list.
I think the bottom line actually I tell people is, however you end up doing it, it's more important to be consistent.
Exactly.
Whether you use behaviors or commands or mixture both,
exactly.
it's better to be consistent, because you think about the programmer behind you too.
Yep. Exactly.
As long as you're consistent, at least you'll do it, and you'll be good to go.
Yep.
All right.
So then the last thing is events. Events are very easy to use in Prism. Basically, what you do is you define a single event class that represents a discrete event.
So can we stop for 1 second?
Absolutely.
I'm sorry. I get asked this, so I'm going to ask you.
Yep.
Events. Why do we need something to do events for us when we can already raise our own events?
Good point. We've got .NET events. We've got routed events. Mm-hmm. Why do we need a third kind of event?
Exactly.
Both those have quite a bit of coupling in them. .NET events, you need object references in both directions. One of those has to have explicit type information. Mm-hmm. The subscriber has to know about the publisher. And it's all about these object reference chains that we're trying to break down in Prism. So that one kind of is off the table for part A and part B load up from two different modules,
so
and they're not
coupling,
supposed to know
right.
about each other. Routed events are all about the UI. They flow up and down the visual tree, and this is all about code that sits behind the UI and is loosely coupled to the UI
itself. Which
works
really good with MVVM
right.
patterns.
So routed events was kind of off the table, and so it's basically the pub-sub pattern is at a patterns level what we were going after.
So we're not just creating something just to create something.
No, this is just a concrete implementation of well-defined patterns.
Okay.
So event aggregator is a well-defined pattern. It's a specialization of the pub-sub pattern. This is just a concrete implementation of
okay.
that for WPF and Silverlight. And so what you do is the event aggregator pattern says I have these event types or objects that mm-hmm. I put into a registry from a patterns perspective, and I can go get a reference to those, and I can publish and subscribe through those. So that's what this class is just a class that represents some event in your system, and it can also carry along a strongly typed payload. In this case, just a string, but that could right. be a whole data structure, a whole object.
Yeah, you can pass some other message. This is great, too, if you want to open up a screen with some kind of default state.
Right.
You can pass
or you want to grab something off the UI context, maybe the selected item as an appointment item, and fire that across to interested parties that aren't tied into that.
Because we don't
UI
always
directly.
Raise events and have nothing
right.
show up on the screen. It's nice to know some kind of message along with it.
Exactly. So you define an event class, and you can see there's really no implementation. It's all provided for you in the base class. You
mm-hmm.
just are really mapping a named event as a type to a strongly typed payload. And then to fire them, we could go to, for example,
this is cool, is you can fire these events and you could have no subscribers
yep.
or you could have new. And the reason I say no subscribers, you could have a module that you haven't written yet
yep.
that this event would be subscribed to.
So down here, for example, when you select items in that list of stocks I showed in the UI,
mm-hmm.
it fires events, and down off the screen, chopped off, there was a news view that brings up news items about that stock.
Yeah.
Fictional, so in this case, the publisher is the list view, and you can see it just goes out. It gets to the event aggregator through dependency injection,
mm-hmm.
in all our examples through the container, gets a reference to that event type, and then just calls publish. And the publish just takes the strongly typed argument that it's expecting.
Right.
And then on the receiving side, notice it doesn't have to have any idea who's out there listening to this.
Exactly.
It just says, this happened, if anyone cares.
And these are weak references, right?
Yes, that's another good point. Is yeah. in the event type, it maintains weak references by default. If you want strong references, it's just an argument to the subscribe method. And then on the receiving side, it's similarly kind of one line of code over here in like the news controller. We can see here, same pattern, get to the event aggregator, get the event that we care about, and then subscribe.
So you get publish and you get subscribe.
And in this case, we just point to the handling method, which takes the strongly typed argument, void return type.
And then my favorite parameter, which you said was one of your babies.
Yep.
Move to the UI thread.
At least in Vault. I don't want to take credit for the good work the rest of the team's done. But there's three main options you have on subscribe here. I mentioned one is the weak references. Two is thread dispatching. You can say, I want it on the UI thread, do it on the publisher thread, which is the default, or on a background thread from the thread pool. And then the third option is you can provide a filter criteria as a Lambda expression or a delegate that basically gets that strongly typed parameter and decides whether to even notify your code or not.
That's a great point, because you could have a published event, which maybe four different modules listen to.
Right.
And then based upon the filter, the state that they pass in, you could have a filter delegate
yep.
to just or Lambda to
exactly.
say, listen to me, don't listen to me. And they could all take action or none. Or
yep. So that's basically the full landscape of Prism 2.2. Modules. Regions or UI composition, commands and events.
Now, commands and events, we talked about how they work in different implementing and how we're going to use them. Commands, generally, if you have some user interaction, you're going to respond to it right away.
Right.
Events are more of a loose relationship, right?
Yeah, so typically events are sourced by something like a view model or a controller and handled by a view model or a controller, so it's behind the scenes communication.
Right, less so. You wouldn't put an event behind a published event behind a button, for
typically,
example,
no.
generally.
Yeah. Whereas commands are more from the UI communicating with that stuff in the background, but in a loosely coupled way as well.
So events would be a good way, if you were doing a view model first implementation of MVVM, where you create the view models, events could be a way where you crank up new screens through the view models. One view model says, oh, somebody wants to crank up a screen. I don't know where this thing is.
Exactly.
Could be in another module. Could be same module.
Yep.
So that would be one option.
Yep. And mentioning view model, just to give a quick look forward as far as Prism 4, the two main thrusts of Prism 4 are better guidance and samples around model view model pattern. Mm-hmm. If you look at all the samples in Prism 2.2 and prior, we sort of are doing view model, but we call it presentation model, which is really the parent pattern of model view model. And sometimes we call it presenter, and they sort of look more like presenters.
Sometimes it's controllers, sometimes they're presenters. Yeah, the samples are a little not as cohesive.
Right.
And I understand part of where that came from, and I know you worked on this too, but
right.
The thing that I try to make people get very clear on is MVVM is not part of Prism.
Right.
Right?
Absolutely, yeah.
But you're trying to make it more cohesive.
We facilitate, the kind of lofty speak is we facilitate separated UI patterns.
So if you want to do MVVM, Prism will work with
it. And so the new stuff we're doing, again, still doesn't dictate MVVM. It just provides stronger guidance and samples around how to do MVVM. And in fact, our current quick start doesn't even use Prism itself. It's just a standalone MVVM quick start.
I'm going to be very selfish here and ask you back to be on the show to do a couple more episodes.
To.
We can dive into some real samples and build some applications from scratch.
Actually write some code instead, just point to it.
And we can start right at the bootstrapper.
Yep.
That's the first
place.
Sounds
great.
Hey, thanks for coming on board, Brian.
Glad to be here.
And thanks for watching Silver Lake.